You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
It's so unfair. The way he gets treated by the Democrats, by the media, by debate moderators, and microorganisms. So unfair. Donald Trump has COVID-19, apparently referring to the pandemic in the past tense, which they did at the Republican National Convention in August, does not confer immunity on the president. So Donald Trump has COVID-19, but it wasn't his fault, because nothing ever is. I don't know who started it, but when you read his tweets, say mommy in a whiny voice first, like adding in bed to the end of a fortune cookie. You have exceptional focus and drive in bed, or anal before the brand name of the RVs you see on highways. Anal Pathfinder, anal expedition, anal jamboree. Adding a whiny mommy to the start of every Trump tweet makes them more bearable. Mommy, now the fake news media is reporting that I wanted my daughter, Ivanka, to run with me as vice president in 2015. Wrong. Totally ridiculous. Mommy, one of the worst polls in 2016 was the Fox News poll. They said they were going to change pollsters, and they didn't. Mommy, liberate Michigan. Anyway, back to the president and his diagnosis. Donald Trump wants us to know it's not his fault. It wasn't his fault that he caught COVID-19 and very likely spread this deadly virus, knowingly spread this deadly virus, to dozens of other people, including Melania Trump and Kellyanne Conway and Chris Christie and the chair of the Republican National Committee and Trump's 2020 campaign manager and a room packed full of wealthy Trump donors at his New Jersey golf course and three Republican senators. And as I sit here recording, the news just broke that Kayleigh McEnany, White House press secretary, has just tested positive for COVID-19. Oh, man, I am running out of tiny little candles to light. The people Trump exposed to COVID between the time he learned he'd tested positive for the virus, a list that may include Joe Biden, who's not out of the woods yet, the people Trump exposed to the virus may have already exposed hundreds or even thousands of other people to this deadly virus. HIV-positive gay men went to prison in the 90s and aughts for failing to disclose their HIV infections to sex partners. Some even used condoms, had protected sex with other men, but didn't disclose they were HIV positive and were prosecuted. Laws that criminalized HIV transmission or HIV exposure were pushed by Republicans, and like most conservative policies concerning sex, they backfired. These laws incentivize not knowing your HIV status because you couldn't be prosecuted for putting someone at risk if you didn't know you had the virus. So these laws led to more infections. Of course, I'm not suggesting that the president be jailed. Not for this. I'm just saying. All right, back to Trump and his COVID diagnosis. Trump would have us believe it wasn't his refusal to wear a mask or his insistence that COVID-19 was a hoax or the large indoor rallies he insisted on holding during a pandemic, RIP Herman Cain, or his failure to enforce social distancing at the Rose Garden Massacre, the packed event where Trump introduced his Supreme Court nominee. It wasn't all that. It wasn't any of that that got his ass infected. It was a woman. Mommy, it's Hope Hicks' fault. And how did the senior advisor to the president get it? Well, we have tape of Trump talking about it with Sean Hannity, but we're not going to make you listen to his voice. I will spare you that. Instead, I will read from the transcript. Trump, who already knows he's infected but just lied to Hannity and says he's still waiting on his test results, Trump tells Hannity how he thinks he got it. And he thinks he got it from Hope. And here's how Trump thinks Hope got it. It's very hard. I can't do a Trump voice. It's very hard when you're with soldiers, when you're with airmen, when you're with Marines and police officers, and the police officers, I'm with them so much. And when they come over to you, it's very hard to say, stay back. It's kind of a tough situation. They want to hug you and they want to kiss you because we have really done a good job for them. And you get close and things happen. Hope is a very warm person with them. And she knows there was a risk. That's where his mind went. That's where his mind goes. In Trump's head, in Trump's fantasy world, and we are all forced to live in Trump's fantasy world right now. Hope Hicks hooked up with every soldier, airman, marine, and cop that wanted to, quote unquote, thank him. So it's not just Jerry Falwell Jr. Conservatives, man, they are all cucks. Not that there's anything wrong with being a cuck. I certainly don't think there's anything wrong with being a cuck. But conservatives think there's something wrong with being a cuck. It's why they use it as an insult. It's why they accuse liberals and progressives of being cucks. Justin Lay Miller, Dr. Justin Lay Miller, frequent guest here on the Savage Lovecast, sex researcher. He wrote an op-ed for the Washington Post about conservatives and cuckolding after the Jerry Falwell Jr. story broke. Heterosexual men who identified as Republicans were the most likely to report having a cuckolding fantasy. Nearly two-thirds, 64% of heterosexual Republican men reported having had this fantasy, and 30% said it is a frequent fantasy. So it's telling, right? When Trump realizes he has COVID-19 and has to come up with an excuse, an explanation, has to blame someone, he starts fantasizing about this woman, one of his women, having sex with other men, dozens of other men. Republicans, man. Now, liberals, for our part, we're likelier to fantasize about power imbalances being a liberal taboo than we are to fantasize about infidelities, which are a conservative taboo. Yet they hurl the cuck insult at liberals and progressives because of course they do. Because Republicans, they project. Trump projects constantly. Whatever he's doing, whatever he's guilty of doing, like trying to rig the election or being Vladimir Putin's puppet, he accuses Democrats of doing. Which brings us in a really roundabout way from Trump's COVID diagnosis to Hope Hicks's inability to turn down a Marine to QAnon, of all things, the right-wing conspiracy theory that's currently eating what's left of Republicans' brains. QAnuts believe a cabal of progressive child-raping cannibals run the world, and Donald Trump is going to bring down that child-raping cannibal cabal and save the children. And children right now kind of really do need saving. We are failing to protect our children. That is the grain of truth at the heart of this insane conspiracy theory. We are failing to protect our children from poverty, from homelessness, from dirty air and dirty water, from climate change. We are failing to protect them from fires and hurricanes and rising seas. And conservatives are responsible for those failures, not just complicit in them, but the authors of them. Conservative politicians and conservative policies and the people who vote for conservatives are harming our children. They know what they're doing, and it's breaking their brains, and the evidence is all over social media. These conservatives, to protect themselves from the realization of what they're doing, they concoct a conspiracy theory about cannibal pedophile Democrats eating children and project the harm being done onto children by them onto liberal progressive cannibal pedophiles. All this craziness to distract themselves from the real threat to children, them. Them and their idiot president, a man too stupid to protect himself and too narcissistic to care about protecting anyone else. A man who, when confronted with his own mortality, can only think about one thing: Hope Hicks making out with a Marine. Oh, and backing way up, speaking of Chris Christie, Republican, former governor of New Jersey, now hospitalized with COVID-19 after spending an unmasked week in a conference room with Donald Trump and Hope Hicks before the first and possibly only presidential debate, Chris Christie said we would have to accept more deaths in order to reopen the economy. Like all Republicans, he didn't mean his own death. He meant yours. Light a little candle. All right, coming up on today's show on the micro edition of the Savage Lovecast, tons of your Q's, lots of my A's, and joining me on the Magnum, we've got a What You Got with Dr. Raphael Landowitz about the promise of an injectable version of PrEP. All that coming up on today's show. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by omgyes.com, a website devoted to women's pleasure. Check it out and get a discount when you go to omgyes.com/savage.
Saving money while you restock your closet for fall just got a lot easier and a lot more fun with ThredUp. ThredUp is the largest online thrift store with up to 90% off your favorite brands like Nike, Zara, Madewell, and more. Get an exclusive offer for an extra 30% off your first order when you go to ThredUp.com/savage. That's ThredUp.com/savage. Go today. Terms apply. Have you heard about Eva? It is a vibrator for couples that provides hand-free clitoral stimulation in a small, powerful package. And it's made by Dame Products, a woman-founded company making the world a better place, one vulva at a time. Visit dameproducts.com/savage to learn more.
Hi, I'm a 30-year-old pansexual female living on the East Coast, and I really messed up. I have a coworker that I work closely with on projects, and we just work a lot together. And ever since we started working together, we really hit it off, and we get along super well. I've had a crush on her since I've met her, but I never wanted to tell her, and I was perfectly happy with not doing anything about it because, you know, I don't want to ruin our friendship or anything that we have. So last night, I have a couple glasses of wine, and I'm texting back and forth with one of my guy friends, and I start telling him all about her, and I'm like, she's super gorgeous, and she's super smart, and I have such a huge crush on her. And then I realized that I sent the messages to her. Her response wasn't terrible. It was something along the lines of, don't know what to say, but I can't stop smiling. But I totally freaked out, and I just started apologizing profusely and trying to explain myself. And it just kind of ended on an awkward note where she was like, okay, maybe you should go to bed. Otherwise, I'll start taking your words at face value. And I'm just so mortified right now. She's on vacation this week, but after that, we're working even more together. And I feel like I can't even face her, and I don't even know what to do. Can you tell me how to behave?
Calm the fuck down. You slipped up. You sent a text to this woman that you meant to send to someone else, and she now knows, horror of horrors, that you, her coworker, which is a little complicated, sometimes problematic, particularly if there's a power differential, but you, her coworker, have a crush on her. And how she initially responded before you began to flagellate yourself with so much effort that you made her feel uncomfortable and awkward, her first response was, don't know what to say, but I can't stop smiling. That means, at the very least, she wasn't offended. She may even be open to exploring with you whether there's a connection there. Don't know what to say, but I can't stop smiling. Now, maybe she's smiling at your discomfort. Maybe she's just smiling at, you know, the torrent of compliments that weren't meant for her eyes but were about her. And she, you know, it was a nice ego stroke for her, but she's not interested. Well, that's to be determined, whether she's interested or not, whether she reciprocates, whether she feels about you the same way that you feel about her. And that's the conversation you're going to have, and you're going to kind of have to have when you see each other at work again, where you could say something like, look, I have a crush on you, and obviously if you don't have one on me and aren't interested in me that way, I won't mention it again, at least to you. I might have to process my embarrassment and sadness with a friend, but I'm a grown-up. Tell her you're a grown-up because you are a grown-up, and I know that all crushes aren't requited, and I can be friendly and professional while I wait for my crush to burn off, to pass, which it will, not because you aren't awesome and crush-worthy, but I know it's on me to redirect my romantic attentions elsewhere if you're not interested, and I will myself to see you as a colleague and a friend and treat you that way, even if you are a colleague and a friend that right now I have kind of a crush on. But one day I'll be able to say I used to have a crush on you, and we can laugh about it then if we're not dating, which again would be my first preference, and then see what she says. Give her the out. Invite her to hit you with the no, I'm not interested. I was flattered. The compliments made me smile. I tried to make you feel better about it and not feel so embarrassed or mortified. And, you know, maybe I did that thing that women often do when they, you know, are asked out by someone they're not interested in. And she was deflecting your attention gently and not shutting you down for fear of hurting your feelings. But because you've invited the note, she's going to shut you down if she needs to. And if she does, well, then you take it elsewhere. You find somebody else to have a crush on. You wait for your crush on her to pass. And there's something about clear and unambiguous rejection that can speed along the process of a crush passing. If she's not interested and she makes that clear to you, I think you'll be out of the crush stage on her pretty quickly. But who knows? You may have lucked into a situation where she didn't see you that way before, but maybe thinking about you that way now, maybe interested in dating you. This could be a story that you get to tell at your wedding and to your kids. Or this could be a story you just get to tell to your sex and relationship advice podcast host and a couple of close friends as you work through the mortification and grief if she doesn't feel the same way about you that you feel about her. But we can't know that yet. She might feel the same way or be open to at least exploring something with you and whether feelings are something that she could develop for you. And you'll find that all out when you see her at work and you make your apologies again, but hopefully more succinctly than you did when you were burying her in I'm so sorry texts, and you invite the no. And then if you get the yes, Yahtzee.
Hi, Dan. I have a problem that only exists because COVID exists. Essentially, I have this employee that has been with us since June. He moved to the southeast to our farm to only to work with us. He's really fucking great. We love him a lot. At the farm is my partner, myself, and the employee. He lives on the farm in a separate house, but we still see him basically every day. We have pretty much potted up because of COVID. Like, we're exposed to each other, but outside of that, we are always masked. And my partner and I have been really serious about quarantine and safety, partly because our business relies on us not being sick. Even if we were asymptomatic, like, just responsibly, we would have to completely shut down until we all tested negative, which wouldn't destroy our business, but would be pretty shitty. And then also, I am immunocompromised. I have a autoimmune disorder. And I try not to think about that on the day-to-day, but, like, lately have been. The problem comes that, like, my employee obviously moved here without knowing really anyone. He is super responsible, and I know pretty nervous, but we never had, like, a talk. Because I didn't think it was necessary, and it's really none of my fucking business what he does outside of work. But he started dating someone, and I don't think he knows that the person he's dating is also dating other people. Basically, he somehow started dating the most popular gay boy in town, and this man is also seeing his long-term ex. I only know this because of Instagram. It's all super high school. Normally, I just wouldn't say anything because it's none of my fucking business. The reason why it's my business is because it literally is potentially going to affect my business. Because it seems like this boy is a potential vector. And I know they're being safe when they're together, but I don't know if the man he's seeing is being safe when they're not together. And I know that's just like the risk that you take. And it's none of my fucking business again, but, like, I don't think he knows. And I don't want to get COVID.
You're a little all over the place. You're pivoting between it's none of my fucking business, but it is my fucking business. And I can't tell my employee what to do or who to see on his own time. But that's exactly what you want to do. You want to tell him who he can and can't see on his own fucking time because of the risk to your business, the risk to your health, if he gets exposed to COVID and brings it to the farm. You say that you guys have pretty much locked down, that you've isolated yourself on your farm, and until your new employee who moved to town to work for you began to meet people in the area where you live, he was pretty much locked down with you guys. You didn't tell him that it was a condition of his employment for the duration of the pandemic that he remain locked down, remain isolated, and only see you two. So there's a conversation you need to have with him now about your expectations and about what is. He lives in a different house. You're doing farm work. You're not in a closed room together. I assume that when you're doing farm work, you're outside. I assume that if you're doing farm work outside or he's doing farm work for you outside, it wouldn't be that hard to maintain at least 6 feet of distance, if not a great deal more distance. And you could negotiate all that. You can make that all clear. If he's been popping into your house for breakfast in the morning, well, you can't do that anymore because he's seeing someone now and he is being exposed to this person who, and you know what you know and you can't not know what you do know, is not being as safe or careful as you guys are being. And to protect your business and to protect your health because you're immunocompromised, you guys have to err on the side of more safety. But in the end, considering that you don't share a home and that you can institute a stricter regimen of social isolation, social distancing from your employee on the farm, it's not office work, you're not next to each other in a single cubicle, that maybe there's accommodations that can be made here to address what is, in your circumstance, a low probability, high consequence event. There's a very low probability, even if he is exposed to COVID, that living in his own house and doing farm work for you at a distance is going to expose you to COVID as well. But it's a high consequence event if he should expose you to COVID. So what degree of risk are you comfortable shouldering here? I think it is a reasonable degree of risk to say to him, you can't come in the house and we can't get within 12 feet of each other while you're seeing this guy who, and you know what you know, I've seen this guy's Instagram. He's seeing other people and his Instagram gives the impression that he isn't being as cautious or safe as we have been so far during the pandemic. So no more breakfasts at our place and no more hugs or high fives in the morning or whatever you've been doing with him that brought you into close proximity. But you know, as the pandemic continues to rage and rage, as we go into a second wave or a third wave, depending on how you count or measure waves, partnered people can't ask single people to never see anyone, to not seek out sex or intimacy or companionship. You get that at home from your husband or boyfriend that you live with. Your employee needs that in his life too. He needs to be as safe as he possibly can be, responsible for his own choices, and aware of the higher degree of risk that you're at as an immunocompromised person should you get exposed, and then do everything he can, if he's going to remain in your employ, to make sure that if he does get exposed by this guy or by some other social contact that he has when he's off the farm, that there's no chance or as little a chance as possible that he might expose you, risking your health and risking health of your business as well. And if doing all of that, you come to the conclusion that the risk to you is still too great and that preys on your mind, then you're going to have to fire him and perhaps hire a new employee with the explicit understanding that they don't leave the farm, that they don't see anyone else. And if they don't have a lover in their life that they arrive with who moves onto the farm with them and never leaves the farm with them, just as they're never allowed to leave the farm, they're not allowed to have sex. They're not allowed to have a boyfriend or a girlfriend for the duration of this pandemic. Seems like an unreasonable ask of an employee by an employer because it is an unreasonable ask. So I would encourage you to do what you can to retroactively renegotiate your relationship with this employee so that you are safe and your business is safe and he is allowed to continue to see this guy if that's what he chooses to do.
If there's ever been a time to invest in good new sex toys, that time is now. A new sex toy can jumpstart your sex life, increase the quality and frequency of your orgasms, and keep you coming back for more. Dame Products is a woman-owned sex toy company making the next generation of vulva-tested, vulva-approved vibrators. Founded by a sex educator and an engineering whiz, Dame develops toys with the help of real humans and couples like you. They're closing the pleasure gap and helping the world one vulva at a time. Dame Products vibrators and accessories are made with medical-grade silicone, smart design principles, and lots of love, earning glowing press from the New York Times, W Magazines, me, and more. Whether you're a couple looking for an extra boost where it matters or on a journey of self-exploration, we're sure that Dame Products will earn a spot on your nightstand. And the best part? Dame offers hassle-free returns within 60 days, so your satisfaction is quite literally guaranteed. Go to dameproducts.com/savage today for $10 off. Get yourself something that's going to improve your sex life, improve your relationship, and support the Lovecast by going to dameproducts.com/savage. That's dameproducts.com/savage.
Hi, Dan, Nancy, and the Tech Savvy at Risk Youth. I'm a 31-year-old cis female bi woman living in the South. I'm somewhere between average and attractive, depending on who you ask, I suppose. So it's not necessarily difficult for me to get guys. And of course, as we all know, dick is abundant and of low value. However, I've just always really had this fantasy of hiring a male sex worker, or hell, two would be great if they agreed to it. I think maybe part of it is the little power trip it would give me, as well as just a new experience. And I don't know why. I just think it'd be great when the pandemic is over and I come out of quarantine and just order up a couple guys. I think it just, the thought tickles me. But I think male sex workers are a lot less common. Am I right about that? Or is that just what pop culture is telling me? I haven't had any luck trying to find something like that. I don't even know where to start looking for a male sex worker, or, you know how to do it safely, stuff like that. So I was wondering if you or your listeners could offer me any sort of advice on hiring specifically a male sex worker.
Male sex workers are less common. It's a demand thing. There are way more paying customers out there who are straight men than who are women or gay men. Why is that? There are more women in the world than men in the world. You'd think there would be potentially as large a market for male sex workers as for female sex workers. But like you said, dick is abundant and it is cheap, and pussy is more abundant than dick, technically, but scarcer, harder to come by, harder to come in. I think it has something to do with how it's riskier for a woman to be sexually free, sexually impulsive, to be out there. Also, that women are socialized to be less entitled or feel less entitled to sex than men are socialized. And maybe there are some biological factors at play too. Men are testosterone-soaked dick monsters. Men churn up a lot of cum and they want to blow those loads. And I think it's a better world when men are milked regularly. And most of the male sex workers who are out there doing that kind of work are doing it for other men, because men will pay for sex. That doesn't mean gay men will pay for sex. That doesn't mean that all male sex workers are gay. Many are bi and many are straight. They're gay for pay. They're just heteroflexible enough to have sex with other men. Or I guess they would have to be counted as Cirque du Soleil style, extremely heteroflexible, if they're out there having sex with other men. But that's where women who are seeking male sex workers have an in. A lot of the male sex workers who have ads on platforms on the internet that still exist despite Fosta Sesta are straight, but they're marketing themselves to men exclusively. And there are a lot of male sex workers who have a presence on Twitter, as a lot of female sex workers have presences on Twitter. And they would appear to be marketing themselves to men exclusively there as well. But a lot of them are straight, a lot of them are bi, and they welcome clients who are women. They just don't actively market themselves to female clients because they don't see that many female clients, because it seems like a wasted effort to market themselves to female clients. So that's where you start. You contact male sex workers through those websites. You contact them on Twitter. You ask them if they see female clients. And if they don't, you ask them if they can refer you to a sex worker that they might know who does.
And I welcome advice from other women who may be listening who've hired male sex workers who'd like to share with the caller, and we'll play your response calls on an upcoming show. I would encourage you to put safety first, and the best way to put safety first when you're talking about hiring a sex worker is, I think, to look for someone who has a presence on the internet, who has a dedicated client base, and talks about it. I think the best sex workers, if you're interested in hiring someone who's doing the work consensually and doing the work professionally and joyfully, is to find someone who's active in the sex workers' rights movement. And many sex workers are, and sex workers who are active in the sex workers' rights movement tend to have profiles and a presence, again, on Twitter. So that is where, if I were you, I would start. And like you, I would wait until after COVID to start. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by ThredUp, the world's largest online thrift store, where you'll find up to 90% off estimated retail. At ThredUp, you can have all the fun of shopping for gently used women's clothing, shoes, and accessories, all the fun of thrifting with no mask required. At ThredUp, you can go on a thrifting shopping spree. Shop from over 45,000 brands for women's or kids' clothing, handbags, shoes, and more for a fraction of the price. You get insane deals at ThredUp, the insane deals of thrifting at ThredUp, but with the convenience of online shopping. Score Zara from $6, Madewell and J. Crew from $9, or Nike from just $6. With new arrivals every minute, there's always something new to discover at ThredUp.com, where you shop online. And at their website, you can customize your search by size, style, and budget so you can find the best deals instantly. It's so easy. Get items in high-quality condition, some even with their tags still on, all delivered right to your door. Safely right to your door. They also have an easy return policy, so they make thrifting worry-free. It's a great site. They make me wish I wore women's clothing. Nancy makes out like a bandit at ThredUp, and you can too. For Savage Lovecast listeners, here's an exclusive offer just for you. Get an extra 30% off your first order at ThredUp.com/savage. That's ThredUp.com/savage for 30% off your first order. Be sure to go to ThredUp.com/savage so that they know we sent you, and you'll get an extra 30% off today. Terms apply.
Hi, Dan. West Coast Canadian guy here. I went on a couple dates with a woman that I really liked about a year and a half ago. And at the time, she had, you know, openly and honestly told me that she was seeing someone else, and both of us at the time were exploring the idea of a poly connection. Anyway, she, after a couple dates, which were both great, awesome dates, she told me that she decided to pursue the other connection exclusively and didn't have the capacity or energy for something open, which is fine. You know, I was hurt. I really liked her, but I moved on. Anyway, a text came out of the blue to me in early August, and this woman said that she saw me on a dating app and thought I was a total babe and wanted to reconnect with me. So we had a beach date together, and it was really great, and it felt like we were just old friends sort of reconnecting. And, you know, given that it was her being the initiator, she was the one that reached out, I was, you know, willing to explore it and see where it went. And we both expressed a mutual desire for an open poly connection and to explore our sexuality and, you know, try threesomes and so on and so forth. I was a bit wary because, you know, knowing that she also has a child, by the way, so knowing that she's a busy single mom who had a history of, you know, ending things in a poly exploratory dynamic, I'm worried that that could happen again. And I'm worried if I'm being too open by wanting to reconnect with this genuinely nice and caring and thoughtful human being. We had plans to watch your Hump Film Festival this coming Saturday. Thank you. But she told me that she's got way too much on her plate right now, and she's super busy and won't be able to hang out with me on Saturday. She's wanting to postpone for a couple weeks from now, where I would be her second option. to an event she was going to attend, you know, which, to be fair, she's had eyes on, I think, for a few months or a couple months at least. So that's totally fair. This event she's been wanting to go to and would be excited about for a couple months would be her priority. But it's the openness, it's the open-endedness, it's the lack of clarity about where things are going to go and how much time she's going to have for me. So, you know, this is a common theme for me. I seem to date these really busy women that don't have time for me. They give me scraps. They give me pieces. I have to chase after them. And, you know, I like a little bit of a playful chase, but I don't like never having availability or being someone's second thought or, you know, having plans cancel or change on me or you know, flaky people. They're all great women. But it seems to be a common theme with these three women, you know, with three women in particular that I've connected with over the last 6 months. They're all too busy and I get scraps and pieces of their time, even though I really like them and they're all genuinely awesome, thoughtful, caring, intelligent women. What would you suggest I do here?
I would suggest that you adjust your expectations. You've met three women over the last 6 months who weren't as available to you as you would have liked them to be based on how awesome you thought they were. It could be the case that you just got unlucky and were drawn to, and three women were also drawn to you in return, drawn to three women in a row who just didn't have the time for a relationship right now and couldn't prioritize you the way you were willing and able to prioritize them. Also possible that you were drawn to three really kind of great, amazing women and they were kind to you. They gave you a chance. They considered you, but they weren't as drawn to you. And you thinking they're awesome doesn't obligate them to make themselves more available to you than they would like to, as painful as that is. And that is painful, but that's fucking dating, man. You ask people out or you pick people up or you swipe left or right on people and you go out and you get a good feeling for them and you get your hopes up and then the feeling isn't reciprocated. They're not as into you as you're into them. And you go through that process again and 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 again, sometimes for years, not months, before you find someone or you match with someone who is as crazy about you as you are about them and as willing to make themselves as available to you as you're willing to make yourself available to them. And you just have to keep at it. And it sucks, I know, and it's painful, I know, because rejection is always painful, even if it's a soft rejection, even if it's more of a deflection than a rejection, even if – and sometimes it can be cruel for someone to give you scraps, like you say, that they're willing to see you a little bit here and there and it's clearly conditional and perhaps provisional that they're, you know, for lack of anyone else to see right now, they're willing to see you. But obviously they're not passionate about you. Otherwise they would be making you their priority. And you haven't met a woman who's – at least in the last 6 months who wanted to make you – their priority and the way you're wanting to make them yours. So what do? Well, you don't write off all women. I don't think all women on the West Coast of Canada are too busy or too poly or too stressed out to seriously date someone and really engage with someone. You just haven't run into that woman yet, gone on a date with that woman yet. You also might want to ask yourself if you're not scaring these women off, because three women in 6 months and you got to the point with each one of them where you determined that they weren't as willing to make themselves available to you as you were to make yourself available to them. Were you coming at them too hard? Were you sending off this signal that dating you is going to be intense and they were either going to have to go all in or they're going to have to pull way back? Because sometimes when somebody is really coming at you and you barely know them, that's a red flag and people will pull back. That there's something about dating at the start where people want some ease, where they want it to be a little breezy so that if they decide after seeing you a few times that you're not the right person for them, you haven't insisted that they make, you know, some sort of premature commitment to you or demonstrate to you that they're passionate about you or really interested in, you know, seeing you all the time and anytime that you want to see them. So slow your roll, adjust your expectations, put things in perspective, talk to your partnered friends about all the relationships that they had with people who dumped them or that they had to dump, who weren't into them or that they weren't into before they found the person that they're with now. And keep at it. Keep putting your hand on that stove. That's all you can do. If you're single and would rather be partnered, that's all you can do is keep at it until you find someone. But be critical enough to look at your own actions, because if you keep getting the same response from different women, all these different amazing women, the same response, there may be something you're doing, some scent you're giving off that is repelling them. Maybe you could ask for a little feedback from a girlfriend from long ago that you still have a good relationship with. If you have friends that you can game out what you've been doing and what hasn't been working, and you give them permission to be critical and promise them you will not get angry if their criticisms cut you or are harsh, you may be able to adjust. You're not going to be able to become an entirely different person. You're still going to want what you want, and you should still put that out there and ask for what you want. But maybe you could slow your roll a little bit.
The Savage Lovecast is sponsored by OMGYes.com. Most of us agree that sexual pleasure is good for us. It's probably one of the reasons you are listening to this show. And sexual pleasure gets better and better with more knowledge about pleasure. Interestingly, lots of people who think of themselves as sex positive and pleasure positive sometimes don't seek out new knowledge about their own or their partner's pleasure. There's a cultural myth that when we become adults, we should just suddenly know exactly what turns us on, how we like to be touched, and that good lovers are telepathic about what you want or expect you to be telepathic about what they want or what works for them. But more info and new info always makes for more and better sexual pleasure. And that's what OMGYes.com is all about. More info, more pleasure. Their scientists partner with Indiana University and Yale University researchers to ask tens of thousands of people what gives them pleasure, what is pleasurable, what works for them. And they find the patterns and shared techniques in the data. They name many things for the first time to help us understand them. And they turn all that wisdom into disarmingly straightforward and honest videos, animations, and data visualizations. The best education. And watching these videos really can help. We have heard from more than one listener who subscribed to OMGYes after hearing about it on the Lovecast and benefited from what they learned. There is so much to explore at OMGYes.com, and it can help you too. It can improve your sex life too. Savage Lovecast listeners get a special discount at OMGYes.com/savage. That's OMGYes.com/savage.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 17-year-old bisexual girl, and about a month ago, I lost my virginity, which is exciting in itself, but I had some questions afterwards because it didn't exactly go so well. I mean, I like that it was a bit sloppy, it was kind of cute, and I didn't mind that it wasn't all perfect, but I got really wet. He said he had jerked off a little bit beforehand so that he would last longer, but he was rather squishy. So it just kept sliding around for 20 minutes and we couldn't exactly get it in. So I don't know if there's something I can do to prevent this in the future or something I can have my partner do. But yeah, I just wanted a little bit of help because it was fun, but getting it all down to it was a bit embarrassing. So yeah, thank you.
Well, congrats. Congrats on losing your virginity. Virginity is a patriarchal concept. It's also not a singular event. People talk about their V card, their virginity card. I've always encouraged people to think about a V deck. You have many V cards that you can play, many experiences that you can have over the course of your sexual life. You've got the vaginal intercourse card. You've got the oral sex card, the outer course card, the kink card. There are so many different kink cards, and on and on
and on. But congrats, you had your first partnered sexual experience, which is a long and complicated way that some people are more comfortable with of saying you lost your virginity. And you got super wet. That's a really good sign. That means that you were very aroused. You had, as they say, a wet ass pussy, and that is good. He was squishy. He was obviously nervous. That sometimes happens. You say he slid around. And what can you do in the future if you're with somebody who has a penis that you want to get erect and you'd like to have in your vaginal canal because you would like to have penetrative vaginal sex? I hope you are using birth control. I hope you are using condoms in addition to birth control. And I hope you have some plan B, some morning after pills tucked away in a medicine cabinet somewhere so that if a condom fails, if condoms are your only birth control method, that you have a backup plan. You have, again, a plan B. But what can you do if the next time you get with this guy or some other guy, some other penis haver, he's squishy? Well, if he's squishy, he's probably nervous. If he wants to be there, if when you were making out, you could feel his erection through his clothes, and then when you got naked and the moment came for penetrative intercourse and he suddenly went soft or putting the condom on and going soft, he's got performance anxiety. The pressure is getting to his dick. So the best thing to do at that moment when the pressure is getting to a guy's dick is to take the pressure off the guy and take the pressure off that guy's dick. There are so many great and fun things that you can do to get off together, to enjoy each other, to feel physically close, to be in contact, that don't require a hard penis or don't require penetrative sex if he's just freaking out about that and nervous about that, or if he's concerned about pregnancy, which some guys, to their credit, are. Mutual masturbation, oral sex, continuing to roll around, outer course, which if he was just slipping and sliding his penis around your labia, if he wasn't inside your vaginal canal, congratulations, you lost your outer course V card. That's outer course. You can enjoy all of those things. And if you say to a guy, we don't have to have PIV, we don't have to have vaginal intercourse to have fun, don't have to have vaginal intercourse to get off. Also a good strategy when you're young to, I think, wait for penetrative sex, to get comfortable with someone if they're going to be a regular sex partner, to masturbate together, to enjoy oral sex, to enjoy some frottage, some outer course, some rubbing against each other, show each other that you can turn each other on, that your pussy's super wet, that his dick is super hard. And that helps a guy sometimes. If he's gotten off, if he's gotten hard and climaxed with somebody who's a new partner, if he's young and nervous a few times before you attempt penetrative sex, he knows that you know that his dick works. And that can help to alleviate his performance anxiety, if indeed you get with this same guy again. Congrats. Congrats on losing one of your V cards. Sounds like you lost the outer course V card. Congrats on your wet ass pussy. And congrats on you. You sound like a very self-possessed, wise, and confident individual beginning her partnered sexual life. And it was really great to get your call. Before we get to your response calls, let's read your tweets. A listener whose Twitter handle is NJAzWrites tweeted out, I distinctly remember at Fake Dan Savage saying that one day the coronavirus will find Trump, and hot damn, Dan, you were right. Hoping karma is every bit the bitch we need and deserve her to be. Did I say that? I say a lot of things. I run my mouth into this mic for a living, and I don't specifically recall saying that, but that doesn't mean I didn't, and I kind of hope I did say that. And hey, remember all those fuck your feelings t-shirts Trumpers have been wearing at their rallies for the last 4 years? Because when their glorious leader says something that upsets decent people everywhere, when he says something racist or sexist or Islamophobic or straight up fascistic, something that a feeling person might object to, it's all fuck your feelings. That's what those t-shirts were about. And then COVID came along and they didn't feel like it was a big deal. They felt like it wasn't any worse than the flu. They felt like it would be over when summer came along. Yeah, well, turns out the virus was wearing one of those fuck your feelings t-shirts too. Ruthie Griffith tweets, at Fake Dan Savage, mispronouncing Megan the Stallion as Megan Three Stallion on this week's Savage Lovecast was the giggle I needed on my morning commute. Thank you to everyone who tweeted at me about that. What can I say? I am embarrassed and I am old, or now I am. I wasn't always old.
And here's the thing about famous people and aging. When you're 12 or 13 and you first become aware of fame and famous people, everyone who's famous at that moment is already famous. And for a little bit, the number of famous people seems stable. And then someone else suddenly gets famous, and then somebody else gets famous, and somebody else. The cast of Full House crowds into the same part of your brain where you'd already stored the cast of Gilligan's Island and Bewitched and Love Boat and Charlie's Angels. And then along comes Friends and The Sopranos and Lost and Game of Thrones and Killing Eve, and those are just TV actors. You've also got to make room in your brain for famous new singers and famous new movie stars, YouTube stars, TikTok stars, reality show stars, porn stars. Eventually, you can't keep up anymore. There's not enough room. There are just too many famous people to cram into your brain, too many names to remember. And it's going to happen to you, too. Just like my grandfather called them the Bowling Stones, and my mom called David Letterman David Mailman, and I called Megan the Stallion, Megan Three Stallion, one day you will start getting the newly famous people's names out there wrong, too. And finally, Katya tweets, I hope my mom's Mormon neighbors are ready to listen to @FakeDanSavage's Lovecast for the next week. Thanks for cranking the volume up, Katya, for the Mormon neighbors. And if your mom's Mormon neighbors are listening and can hear my voice right now, I hope you're enjoying the Savage Lovecast. Okay, if you want me to read your tweet on an upcoming episode of the Savage Lovecast, be sure to include the #SavageLovecast. We appreciate everybody who tweets about the show or posts to Instagram about the show, helps get the word out. And now your response calls.
Hi, I'm calling in response to the caller who mentioned they were worried about or contemplating how men in straight relationships might not receive their partners being guys that well. And I want to say they do. I mean, at least for me. I came out about 2 months ago during quarantine and have started transitioning, and it's been enthusiastically accepted. And it turns out my boyfriend is very bisexual. So odds are, if someone's attracted to you and your masculine energy that you already kind of have, they're probably a little bi, and it'll be okay, and they'll probably be cool with it.
Hey, Dan, I'm calling about the man who got reamed in the bathroom and now might have fissures. I suffered from fissures for 3 years. I used all the goops from the doctors, the steroid creams. They give you headaches, or, you know, you'd be cautious about using them. I finally found an article on the National Institute of Health about doing self-massage for fissures, where you put some lube on your finger, stick in your ass, get past the little bit of stinging that happens, and leave it in there long enough that your sphincter relaxes, which allows the blood to flow, which is why it doesn't heal, because it's hard to get blood there. And doing this and putting some Neosporin cream on my ass, I am now healed. I am back to getting reamed properly, and I can't recommend it enough for those who have fissures that just won't go away.
Hi, this is a comment for the caller who was talking about his mother forwarding or reposting the comment on Facebook from the most recent episode. And I would just like to highly encourage you not to lead with calling your mother a racist or if from like an attack kind of stance. I agree with everything Dan said, and I'm totally, you know, in the ballpark of talking about racial justice and having those hard conversations. But there, if she is at a place where you can actually have a real conversation with her and you feel like she's going to be open about it, you really got to meet her where she is to start, even though it's really a challenging thing to do. And I know that it sucks, but if you can really listen to where she is starting from and meet her where she is, you're going to have a much more successful conversation with her. And that's the kind of conversations we need to be having right now with people that are willing to have them. I'm not talking about, you know, the really intense racists who just are not going to listen. But in this case, it might be someone you can really get through to. So we encourage you to have that conversation. Good luck.
And we're going to leave it there. 206-302-2064 is the number here at the Savage Lovecast. If you'd like to send us a question or a comment for a future show, give us a buzz, 206-302-2064. You can also use the voice memo app on your phone to record your question and email it to us at voicemail@savagelovecast.com.
You have one more chance to watch the 15th Annual Hump Film Festival online this Saturday, October 10th. Go to humpfilmfest.com to get tickets. And this is the year to make your own film for Hump. It's easy and fun, and you can win big cash prizes. Submissions for the 16th Annual Hump Film Festival, which kicks off in 2021, are due December 4th. Go to humpfilmfest.com/submit to find out how to make and submit your Hump film. And just in time for the spooky season, the producers of Hump are launching a new scary short film festival. Slay Film Fest starts on October 15th and runs through Halloween with two volumes of over 30 horror films from all around the world. Go to slayfilmfest.com to get tickets and watch the trailer. Follow me on Twitter at @FakeDanSavage. Follow Megan The Stallion on Twitter at The, with two E's, Stallion. The Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian, and me and the techs have At Risk Youth and Nancy. We'll all be back at you next week with an installment of the Savage Lovecast. Wear a mask, be well, and vote. Vote. We have a month. Please vote. Vote early, but not, as the president has suggested, often, just early. Talk to you next week.